The reason I talk more about product owner is because it's full of anti-patterns all over the place, and I want to help product owners escape from the traps that I have fallen into. We have Scrum, there's the Scrum product owner. We have Safe, the undercover waterfall agent. There's the Safe product owner. And then we have other types of product owner. If you ask 10 people what a product owner is, you get 10 different answers. If you ask 10 people inside the same company, you get still 10 different answers. The difference is, generally, companies try holding people accountable for output. So they deliver the feature meeting the deadline, that's enough. That's never enough, because the feature is just a means to an end. What about defining what we want to achieve exactly? So let's understand this and then define the results a team should achieve and then hold them accountable for results. And what we need to do is to keep the executive seeing the progress. Because once the results become reality, then that will talk louder than a plan. So we need to move from an abstract discussion to something that a team can work with and then bring the concrete results. Then it becomes easier. In general, what I see, the CPO has the responsibility of pointing the team to the right direction.
Hi, I'm Maria, and this is the Agile State of Mind. Welcome, and welcome to the series Scrum Conversations, where I talk all things Scrum and Agile with my series Scrum colleagues. And today I have with me David Pereira. David or David?
It's David.
It's David in Brazilian as well. Okay.
Well, my dad decided it should be David somehow.
All right. Yeah, well, that's more international then. So nice to have you here. Thanks for joining. I will introduce you a little bit to the viewers because they probably read your articles. Not sure if they saw your face, even though you also have a YouTube account. David is a product leader, a very prolific writer. You can find him on Substack. I will share the link in the description. And now also a CPO, Chief Product Officer in Omoco. Is that right?
Yeah, that's me.
And today I'm very happy you are with me. I'm doing this series and I never met anyone. And now we are meeting face to face, let's call it the Zoom face to face. So I'm very happy to have this opportunity to talk to you. And I have been following you for a long time. I think you are one of the persons to write most about what is a PO, the product owner, product manager. And you had like so many articles. I was always just like, how can you find so many inspiration to write? So today I would like to talk about really the roles and like what it really means to be a product owner, a product manager. And also, because right now you're the chief product officer, I would like to talk about that role as well, because it's so far sometimes in the companies from the usual work that it's very interesting to get to know like what does that mean. And I also got a few questions because yesterday on my Instagram, which I will post here, how you can find my Instagram is at Agile State of Mind, where I posted that I'm having a guest to talk about all those things. And I got a few questions for you from the audience. I would like to start with the CPO because it's like fresh. So could you tell me how your work scope changed when you moved from being like a product manager or a head of product and now a CPO?
It changed the level. Like you need to focus more on strategy. Now I understand why I complained a lot when I was a product manager, because as a CPO, you talk to more people like investors, shareholders, executives, highly influential people. And the truth is everyone pushes you to some kind of command and control, predictability, and so on. You can do what they want, and then everyone from the team will be unhappy and they will be trapped. And it's very hard to keep this, let's say, in a way that it will be agile, it will be more modern product management, so to say. Because the difference is, I would say, I have to deal with a lot of stakeholder management to agree on a direction and also to protect the team from doing what I think it would be against creating value, like a timeline, very predictable, what happens when, very precisely, because then the teams will stop creating value and start discussing the timeline and turn a blind eye to this. So the main difference is about the strategy, focusing very much on that. And what I learned is it's very easy to fall into execution and start telling the others what they should do instead of telling them what they should achieve.
And why do you think that is? I would like to understand, because maybe just for more context, you are also, your context is German, right? You work in Germany, although you are from Brazil. So that's already a big cultural change. And I'm in Spain and I'm from Poland. I think Poland is closer to Germany than Spain, probably, when it comes to that. So do you think that also has something to do? Or would you say that at this level, the C-level, every company is basically influenced a lot by the investors and by everybody wanting to see this kind of, have some kind of control of what will happen and when?
I think it has a little bit of both. So coming from Brazil, we don't like processes. It's annoying. So we call it bureaucratic, and we want to progress fast and get hands-on and start moving on and so on. So we like flexibility. And Brazilians are really oriented into progress and adapting. So it is our life. In Brazil, it's not as simple as in Germany, where everything is super well organized. So in Brazil, we need to adapt all the time. Mm-hmm. A simple example is when I arrived in Germany. I remember waiting for the bus, and the bus was late 1 or 2 minutes, and the German person was super mad about it, like saying, like, how can that be possible? It's already 2 minutes. It's impossible. When I was in Brazil waiting for the bus, if the bus would come, I would be happy. Maybe it would take 30 minutes or something like this. And then I would be even happier if I could enter in the bus because it was full of people. So I had to adapt all the time how I would get to work. Mm-hmm. So that's how we think. We are continuously looking at the cards that are available to us and saying, what is the best play we can do here right now with the card we have? And in Germany, what I learned since I arrived is very process oriented. Everyone has responsibilities, what is expected from you. And I learned that if you want to get a German annoyed, you don't tell the next 10 steps. And beyond that, you need to have a backup plan for each step. So this makes things more complicated.
Well, that's actually very hard to be agile in that environment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's where I have a lot of fun, because I like being a thought provoker. And I say, all right, let's say we do that. Then we follow the process, realize the process is wrong, too late in the process, waste a lot of time. Is that what you want? Say, no, but it works well with other industries, so we need to find the right process. I said, there's no such thing as the right process. There's the goal, and there is the right experiments that will create the right learning. So I said, when we work together, there is no process like that. We set the goal, and we define the first step, and from there we go. We go all together. Mm-hmm. So some Germans are quite resistant to that. I generally ask to start trying out and learning, and then we can move on. That is okay. But when it goes to the executive level, what changes quite a lot is the fear of losing something. Because as an executive, you want to ensure that the company is successful. And then it's a command and control. So thinking like, I need to ensure that we are safe from failure. We need to ensure that. So we want more predictability. So I think it's a combination of the accountability of the role plus the culture that makes it harder, because that's imprinted in the brain. But for me, the definition of great leadership is not the one that comes up with all the great ideas, but the one that creates environment where the great ideas can happen.
I agree with that. It's very typical. I now work also for American company, and I see that a lot. So, you know, sometimes you would think, oh, I can imagine for the German culture that it's more precise. Everybody wants to have control. But then you go to different companies in different parts of the world, and everybody has this need of control. And I spoke a lot about that with Pavel Hurin. You probably know him. He's also a product leader, and he was just laughing at me all the time. And I'm like, no, but how do you help? How do you make sure those people that need this kind of control, and they are actually used to, because even though we cannot provide it, we provide the illusion of that control by giving a very detailed timeline. How do you make sure that with your, oh, hi, I will just tell you the next step, and then you have to deal with it. How do you help them the transition from like having next 10 steps plus plan B for each of them to just having one step.
I think it's about the accountability. The difference is generally companies try holding people accountable for output. So they deliver the feature meeting the deadline, that's enough. So what I say is that's never enough because the feature is just a means to an end. So say, what about defining what we want to achieve exactly? What matters most right now? Is it growth? Is it retention? Is it a new market? So let's understand this and then define the results a team should achieve and then hold them accountable for results. So we work a lot on the result and then that's what I suggest. And let's define objectives, results, and then from there, help the team progress. So I say, instead of telling them what to do and giving all the steps and putting a lot of guardrails, let's set the right context, which is our moment. If it is a growth moment, which audience are we going and which trade-offs are we willing to make? Because many companies say, we want to grow. Okay, but growth is beautiful, but what are you willing to sacrifice? Are you willing to sacrifice, for example, revenue? Maybe you are buying revenue while you are growing. Or what are the trade-offs you are willing to make? So what I talk to them a lot is, let's set the conditions for the team to work and then help them instead of pushing them towards this. And what we need to do is to keep the executive seeing the progress. Because once the results become a reality, then that will talk louder than a plan. So we need to move from an abstract discussion to something that a team can work with and then bring the concrete results. Then it becomes easier. Because without that, it's hard. But of course, you cannot change a culture from one day to the other this way. Then I suggest starting with one initiative. Say, let's take this initiative, a very small one, and work in a different way. The others, we keep the traditional way, but let's see the difference, what happens. Then they will start gaining confidence with that.
All right, that's, I think, the key, to start small, because otherwise you get too much resistance probably, right? I sometimes wonder, what is the CPO actually like accountable for? Are you accountable for the strategy? Or for this goal, vision? Is there a committee? Because then you have the other C-levels. And depending on the company, you might even have next to you a chief strategy officer or COO. So, and they would have a lot to say as well on where the company should go when it comes to like operations.
That's a tricky question, because I don't think there's a one size fits all. It depends on the organization. First part is understanding where the CPO sits. Mm-hmm. Today, I received a message on LinkedIn from a recruiter saying that they have a CPO position and they would like to interview me and I would report to the COO. So I said, So the CPO reporting to the COO, that's new to me. So it depends. Is a CPO an executive part of the board or is a CPO someone under the hierarchy? Because if that is the case, the responsibility will be limited for sure. In general, what I see, the CPO has the responsibility of pointing the team to the right direction. So I would say it's the product success and ensure that the product will become marketable. So you need to create a product that has a market fit. That is the ultimate responsibility and leading the team to that.
Okay, yeah, because then you have the CMO, chief marketing officer, and then you need to somehow agree with them unless you don't have that person, right?
Yeah.
Because I understand they help a lot with like the initial part of, okay, how was the market fit and how we can actually, if we can actually be able to sell it and market it the way that you describe it. So for me, it's a bit, I don't see really where are the boundaries and how.
There is an overlap and it really depends. So I think the market will have a huge collaboration and so on. But the product, for example, needs to own both parts, discovery and delivery. Sometimes it happens that discovery is outside the product. So that will lead to a feature factory inevitably. So that's why I think that the CPO has to be accountable for creating a marketable product, and marketing will help that achieve the right customers. Like how do you communicate the message? How do you target them? How do you find them? And so on. So marketing will work a lot with the reach and the communication, I would say.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's move on to the roles, and I know you have a lot of opinions there. That's why I'm very happy. I can't wait for this conversation. I would like to start with one of the questions that I got. I will give you a little of backstory why for me it's like important to understand the difference between PO, the product owner, and the product manager. And that's especially in the companies. And I have been in a few companies where that was a different role. So there was a product manager who did something with the customers or whoever, and he spoke somewhere like outside. And then there was a product owner who was like inside, speaking to the teams. And then it was for me very strange because I always thought that like role of the PO is to know and talk to the stakeholders so they can then better understand and how to deliver something. I saw that as a case. And for me, it was a bit of a black box what these product managers are doing, because we also have the typical operations people, you know, client success, CDMs and so on, that I don't even know what that means, but there are a lot of them and they are not product managers. So there's a lot of people talking to the customers. And then there's the PO who somehow needs to like gather all that. So maybe let's start with that, if you could explain a little bit the difference.
Yeah, I've been in a scenario like you described. I was a PO in this case. And I also thought like, okay, the product manager is the one defining what needs to be delivered and need to ensure that it's delivered correctly. Mm-hmm. And what happened, that was in the beginning of my career as a product owner. What happened was quite funny, because most of the times we created something that didn't resonate with the end users. And then the product manager would blame us for poor execution. And then we would blame back for poor decision making. And it would, guess what? It would go nowhere, because then we would keep arguing with each other. And then we would move to the next initiative. The results would be just alike. I just didn't know what was the difference. What changed a lot to me was like when I had an interview with booking.com and I applied, I didn't apply, they reached me and then I said, okay, let's try it out. And it was for a product manager, but I was a product owner, so to say, and I failed miserably. And then the guys told me like in a feedback session that I failed because I couldn't answer some basic questions and they were about product management. Then I started trying to understand and I realized that the product owner role I was playing and that most companies played was a misinterpretation of the product owner role. The problem is we have Scrum. There's a Scrum product owner. We have Safe, the undercover waterfall agent. There's the Safe product owner. And then we have other types of product owners. So it depends who you ask, depends the company you ask. I generally say, if you ask 10 people what a product owner is, you get 10 different answers. If you ask 10 people inside the same company, you get still 10 different answers. What I see is the following. A product owner is now an accountability inside Scrum. That is my view. Many people still say role, but Scrum guy changed that to accountability, but it's definition inside Scrum. And that is best fueled by an experienced product manager within the responsibility end-to-end. In most companies, what happens when both are there, the product owner is responsible for tactics and the product manager responsible for strategy. And why is that a bad decision in my eyes? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of breach in communication and that will create a broken phone. So the product manager talks to the customer, envisions a strategy and something and so on, and then channels that to the product owner. The product owner will have some understanding from the product manager. We'll create several backlog items, we'll refine with the team, and the team will create the item. Problem is, like the team, the ones that are creating the solution, are very far from the customer. They are not talking. They talk to the product owner, who talks to the product manager, who talks to the customer. So that is why it's super bad. So for me, it doesn't matter the title, it should be one role. It could be a product manager responsible for end-to-end. And if we work with Scrum, the product manager is the product owner. Can be a product owner if you want, like in Europe. When I moved to Germany, I was hired as a product owner. It was written in my contract, product owner. And in one of the podcasts from Marty Kagan, he once said, never ever put in your CV that you are a product owner. That's not a job. Don't embarrass yourself. This is how the Americans would see, because a product owner is not a job. So it gets quite complicated, because in Europe, it is a job. In many, many companies, you can be hired as a product owner and they may expect you to do tactics. So I think there's a lot of misinterpretation and misimplementation. So that's why it gets quite complicated. Some companies are moving more like to end-to-end responsibility, and they are even changing the names from product manager to product lead. In my opinion, both names are bad because the product owner doesn't own anything and the product manager doesn't manage anyone. So it gets a bit funny. So you don't own anything, you are a product owner, don't manage anyone, and you are a product manager. Your role is to lead people. I think the main responsibility is identifying problems that are connected to the goal and prioritize solving them and work together with the team to figure out solutions and then create something that delivers value. That is a job and should be one person from end to end. If you put both, confusion is on the way.
Okay, that's a great answer. Thank you. And yeah, I never heard about the product leader, that people actually change the name of the role, and it actually makes sense, but it just creates so it's like we are in this name confusion with every role that you can find, right? I had the whole series when I was talking to engineering managers who didn't know, like half of them were like engine tech managers or tech leads, and some of them were leading people, some of them were not leading people. And that's, again, we have the same problem here. Once we are at this, how is the hierarchy? Because you just said product manager doesn't necessarily manage people, but they can manage people if there are other POs or whoever there in the company, right?
Yeah, I've seen that. I don't support this, like product owners reporting to product managers. I think this leads to a lot of problems. Because for me, it's the following. If you have both, one should be able to challenge the other. That's the minimum. And if there's a hierarchy, there's a certain resistance. Either we like it or not, unless you are, let's say, from one of the Scandinavian countries, that is natural to challenge each other, that will happen. But depending on the culture, that will barely happen. So the product manager reporting, generally the product manager will report to a group product manager or head of products. Depending on the size of the company, to the VP or directly to the CPO. It depends on the size. A group product manager would still be hands-on, be playing a product manager role in one of the teams and probably having 2 to 3 direct reports. So this is the way. The product owner should be the same, reporting to the head of products or to someone of them. What it shouldn't be is reporting to the product manager. Once I got in a situation that I wanted to change my job and I was in an interview, and then I generally asked the question, how is the team topology? Because I want to see the level of product understanding there. And then I got to this topology. There's a VP of product, the head of products, the group product managers, the product manager, and the product owners. I said, oh, I think I have a bit of a problem with this one. They asked why. I said, well, I think we won't get together. I said, it's not for me. I won't support both roles together. It needs to be one person end to end. They said, it is impossible. And then what I learned is like what I had was with big teams. Each development team had around 10 people. And then they had one product owner. I said, well, that gets tricky. If you have such a big team, then yes, then you need a kind of a backlog owner because you need to kind of feed the beast to keep the team running. And in this case, it's hard. I think it's better to have smaller teams with only one, like a product manager with like a team of 5 people. Then it gets more smoothly because you can focus, you can have different flight levels. You can have a strategic flight level and a tactical one. So the hierarchy, it depends on the company.
Okay. I agree with that, that it would be very tricky to have like product owner and then product manager and on top of that one reporting to the other. And then it means that your work is better if you get out of the teams, right? Because you get to pay more and be paid more and so on. I understand that concept. And that was one of the questions from the audience. They were like, should we actually talk less about POs and more about PMs? And the role in Scrum comes with the baggage and people don't really understand the whole scope of the PM role, right? But I would like to ask, so given that in many companies, that's actually 2 roles, how do you get this to be one for one person? Because they would be like, you want me to do double shift right now? How can you have time to manage the stakeholders, talk to the customers do the discovery and on top of it also prepare and have the backlog ready for the team and work on the delivery.
So it depends on how the product owner is able to empower the team. So everything comes down to empowerment and communication skills. So just answering the previous question, like a lot of people already told me, you should move away from product owner, start talking more about product management. And the reason I talk more about product owner is because it's full of anti-patterns all over the place. And I want to help product owners escape from the traps that I have fallen into. So I want to help more companies to perceive that there is a chance. And how do you get to one person doing the whole job end to end? So first you need to understand what most product owners spend their time with. If you ask product owners how much time do they spend with the product backlog, you can be surprised. They will spend massive amount of time there because they need to curate the product backlog. And there are even some software engineers that would like to receive a backlog item so detailed that they don't need to talk to anyone. They just need to follow what is written there and implement beautifully. So yeah, if the goal is that, then you don't need a product owner, actually. You need a story writer, someone just to write user stories there. But the difference of a product manager end-to-end is like, when you're doing discovery, you are on exploring problems, experimenting with things, and so on. It's something that is quick and frequent. And then when you are on the delivery aspect, you're not telling the team what to do, writing user stories with 10, 15 acceptance criteria prior to talk to the team. You come there and say, that's what we discovered, and that's what we want to achieve. What could we do? So it's a collaboration, because it's a misunderstanding putting the product owner also in a hierarchy above the Scrum team, which is wrong. We are on the same hierarchy level. And then it's about getting the team also to think on solutions instead of just following what someone else outside the team said. So this is the difference. And I would say, for example, now it's been some time I'm not a product owner anymore, but the last time I was, I used to spend 4 hours a week with backlog management. But my first time I used to spend actually almost 4 days, because everything I was doing was keeping my backlog very beautiful and big, because I wanted to ensure that everyone would have enough work. And I want to ensure that the backlog has just enough for the team to think on how to solve problems and which problems to solve right now.
Okay, so from 4 days to 4 hours, that was what you decreased. Yeah. But that's also, it's what you said at the beginning. I think this is gradual. You can't just go like with the people we said at the beginning. You don't just go and like, oh, we will do initiative differently and you will have to deal with not knowing. And now, and I think here it's the same. It's like, they are so used to having this very full-fledged stories that you just need to like gradually introduce less and less and see that it still works, because nobody will start if they don't have the full design also shown, right? And like they want to have it all.
So you need to change a bit this. And you're right, you cannot change from one day to the other. So my initial strategy was, I want to ensure, I always told the team, I think I'm removing the fun from you. I think I'm just telling you what to do, and I think I'm the worst person to do that. You know software development better than I do. So you should be able to make decisions instead of me making them for you. So I said, I have an idea that I bring the context and the problem, and we talk about it, and you decide on the solution. And by the end of the sprint, we see whatever you come up with. And of course, software engineers said, no. How do I start? There are many constraints. I need to know. There are many decisions, requirements, and so on and so on. I said, let's give it a try. Generally, we would deliver 5 to 7 stories per sprint. I said, let's take one story out of this, and then let's do it differently. And then during the retrospective, we talk about it. We see what happened. And then we keep trying and we keep iterating. I think it took around 4 to 6 sprints for the team to tell me, let's start only with these stories. They are more interesting and we can always find better solutions once we have the chance of doing that. But it took some time. So first you need to, you know, you need to remove the stone inside your shoes to have one step. And that was just giving it a try to one user story without the acceptance criteria pretty well defined. It was more focused on the conversation. And of course, it's annoying in the beginning because people are still uncomfortable with the unknown. They keep asking tons of questions, but then it gets funny and then it changes the responsibility and accountability level. In this case, it was easy because everyone had the same style of what I mean by way of growing in the company. It was about meeting the OKRs. That was easy. But in another context, software engineers would receive a bonus compensation by the amount of bugs they didn't create. So it was code quality. And the other was the amount of store points they delivered. So that would get in the way. So you need to understand the context and then figure out what you can do there to start changing. So that's why I said one of the key roles of a product owner to be to have end-to-end responsibility is to master communication and empowerment. Because you need to figure out how to deal with the things around you.
Wow. Yeah, I'm shocked by the amount of story points to get the bonus.
Yeah.
Wow. I would just, everything would be a 13 and 21 for me if I was that team member, you know? Okay. But yeah, I agree. Okay. So it's a matter of, well, also being patient, because you say between 4 and 6 sprints, that's not like, oh, in one sprint, everybody will be on board. No. So yeah, you just have to be patient and keep on trying what you have in mind. This role, it requires a lot of assertive, like you have to be assertive and you have to be very resistant, right? Because you will be hit by different people from different sides about different things. How do you deal with that? There is like a need of have certain skills or personality traits to be a product owner. I don't think anybody can be that.
Yeah, it's true. You need to be very resilient. It's demanding, it's exhausting. I think it's like Rocky Balboa. There is this saying, like, it's not how hard you can hit, it's about how much you can get hit and keep moving forward. Because everyone will hit you on the way. So software engineers, UX designers, everyone is going to annoy you. And for me, it's like, because I have been in different sides of the coin of the same equation. I was a software engineer already. So there were things I really hated. And I hated people telling me what to do. Because sometimes I had different ideas and I want them to take place. I was a product owner, let's say unempowered one, the misinterpretation. More like a backlog owner. And then I realized what I don't like. So for me, it's more like, I like changing things for the better. And I believe that some people, they work the way they do because they haven't experienced another way. They are so used to that they think it's the only way of working. And I have been in many different places. And sometimes I was a problem because I didn't know another way of working. So I just tried to help. And for me, I get excitement when I see people working in a more engaging environment and they can bring their best skills and so on, instead of that kind of thing. Oh, it's always the same sprint after sprint, delivering stories. And we no matter how much you deliver, it's never enough. And kind of, hamster wheel. So I want to help people escape from that. So that is what motivates me. And I kind of don't care when people are annoying me. I just keep moving and so on. I ignore. I have a selective listening. So I pay attention to the signs and ignore the noise.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So that requires a lot of like this trait of try harder. Like whatever happens, you try again and try and you don't stop because of the first contradiction or blocker you find, right? So the question I would like to ask right now is the question from Alba from Instagram, and she says that she has been working as a PO for about 3 years and now she feels a little bit stuck and she doesn't know how she can improve, continue learning. Is there any PO community? Could be really cool. What would you advise?
I don't know if it's 3 years in the same company, same context. I think it's important to see, to have different experience. So I encourage people switching jobs sometimes if you get stuck. I was a PO in a startup. I was a PO in a huge corporation with 100,000 people. It's really a different beast. And whenever I moved, I could learn a lot. I worked in a lot of companies. You don't need to do exactly as I did. I don't know. I think I worked in total for 11 or 12 companies, starting from software engineer. But also, apart from that, if you don't want to change jobs, you can attend to meetups. Like, there are many, like Product Tank, and you can see different perspectives. Go to some conference, like Mind the Product. You can also go to Product at Heart, depending where you are, and talk to people, exchange. And another way is also sharing your ideas and asking for perspectives. Actually, I write a lot because it gives me back a lot. It's not only sharing my thoughts, but I had a chance of exchanging with people worldwide because they share their ideas. Some of them challenge what I wrote there, saying that doesn't work. I say, well, it works in my context, so tell me how it works in yours. Then I get to know more. And sometimes I just try things. So networking in different ways. But let's say you need to expose yourself. Expose yourself to something outside of your comfort zone, and then you learn.
Okay, thank you. Also, we have Serious Scrum community that anyone can join, and we exchange so many ideas, and it's great on Slack, right? So yeah, that's also a possibility. So because our time is coming to an end, before we go, how do you see like the future? You mentioned that now people are changing to name the role product leader, and you know, I hope we're gonna implement a bit more of like discovery into what we really want to do. How do you see the future of the roles?
So there's a future I hope for, and the one I try to create wherever I go, which is there's one person responsible end to end. Doesn't matter the name. I generally call more like as a product manager instead of a product owner. And this entails discovery and delivery. So that's what I envision more. More companies doing that and moving away from that. There's something I have been seeing, which is a kind of allergy to Scrum. So some companies don't want to hear the name Scrum. Some developers also don't want because of many other things, but they perceive Scrum as a process and they forget about the mindset behind it and so on. And my fear goes towards the prescriptive frameworks that many companies are adopting right now, mainly the big ones, because they want to remain in control. So then they use SAFe, for example, which I cannot support.
Have you ever worked?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you did.
Yeah. That's why I was a product owner and I was a product manager. I hate SAFe. The reason I dislike that is because if you look at that, it's highly prescriptive. But for high management, it's beautiful because they have the feeling of control. So it can be that this is the future for the big corporations trying to remain more in control. But I imagine that as younger leaders emerge, there will be more attendance of end-to-end responsibility with a single role.
Just before we go, you know, now there's like popping up a lot of product operations. And a lot of the operations parts, like I heard even the UX operations, product operations, engineering operations. How do you see that when you talk about this end-to-end responsibility?
I see it as a trap. I think it's a little bit waterfallish what is happening, separating more and more disciplines. And my fear is like the waterfall is just one after the other. This is just creating operations for this. For me, it causes a little bit of allergy because I'm a bit stupid person. I cannot have a lot of things in my head. I want simplicity. And if I cannot memorize all the names, it's complex. That's one of the reasons I like Scrum. It's very simple to use it. You need the right mindset. So the product operations, my fear is it can cause some trouble of like this ping pong effect. Oh, so there is this part. It's not my responsibility. It's someone else. This is someone else and so on. I haven't experienced with that. But the way I have worked with one team, smaller teams fully responsible for something like created more value. So I wouldn't change exactly this. I would just ensure that the team has enough to be able to create value.
Interesting. Thank you so much. It was very interesting. I took a lot of notes and I'm very happy in the way that you explain everything. It's very easy to grasp, and I'm getting this kind of education in product management with you guys. So it's really interesting for me as well. And thank you so much for your time and good luck with the dream of more end-to-end rather than I'm also with you on that one. So I hope that's the future we will have.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.